Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim and Chris. On today's Davis Cup special, brought to you by the UTS Grand Final.
Italy win the Davis Cup for the first time in 47 years.
Australia finish runners-up again.
And we look at the BJK Cup qualifier draw for 2024.
Kim, today is the 26th of November and we are here to catch up on the Davis Cup final live from Malaga. Italy are your champions, their first title since 1976, 47 years of hurt, but they got it done today. Jannik Sinner leading the charge against Australia. They came out victors 2-0. We didn't go to a decisive doubles and Italy are your champions. I mean, what do you make of that?
Well, you've just said 47 years of hurt, which has immediately given me three lions in my head, Joel. So thanks very much.
That's a long time for Italy, which I would consider like almost like a powerhouse team in tennis.
Yeah, I was
47
surprised
47 years
at that.
Is long.
Yeah, and their first final since 98. Very surprising statistic, given that they've, you know, have always had quite a good depth in men's tennis. And, you know, it's such a... such a way of life out there, isn't it? And they get a lot more people into the game than we do typically in the UK. But yeah, fantastic scenes, you know, joyous occasion for Italian tennis. You know, that long wait is over and they have lifted the title once again. And once again, it was the Jannik Sinner show for the third time in the space of a week. You know, really solidly getting the job done. And just giving the team that confidence, you know, I think everyone felt that that rubber was guaranteed to be in, you know, Italy's favour. And it was really a case of what was going to happen in rubber one. And it could have gone the other way, couldn't it, Joel?
Yeah, it was. I mean, Popperin versus Arnaldi. I mean, Arnaldi came in because it was Musetti in the semi-final. He couldn't deliver. So we went back to Arnaldi, who fell just short against Bottic van der Zandschulp in their first tie here. And it was very tight, wasn't it? I think Popperin will be disappointed. I mean, Leighton Hewitt in press afterwards said it was a match that could have gone either way. And when you look at some of the, you know, some of the stats, I mean, Popperin, particularly in that third set, the number of break point opportunities that he had that he didn't convert, I mean, he'll be really, you know, ruining that because he was in a prime position, I think, to put Australia 1-0 up in the tie. And, you know, almost from that point of view, it would have been mission complete, you know, get it into that doubles where they would have felt confident and they would have felt like the favourites. But Arnaldi, despite that second set blip, just he seized his moment when he should have, when Popperin really didn't.
Yeah, Popperin had 8 break points in that third set. He was getting break point opportunities in, I think, about 4 of Arnaldi's service games.
He was the better player.
He was overall, but I felt that on those opportunities, you know, either Arnaldi did come up with something big to save the opportunity, or Popperin was just very tentative. I don't think he went for his shots enough. I think he was like scared to kind of make an error, whereas Arnaldi did just like go for things a bit more. And obviously in tennis, it's about when you win the points, you have to win those crucial points. And we've seen it so many times where players just aren't able to capitalize and they end up losing because they're not winning the points when it matters the most. And that's the kind of joy of the uniqueness of the scoring system that we have in tennis. I was thinking it was going to be when Popperin kind of quickly went up in that second set and took it, I thought, oh, are we getting a repeat of the Musetti Kecmanovic match from yesterday? But to give Arnaldi credit where it's due, he made sure that, you know, the match didn't run away from him, and he hung in there, got his chance at the very end, and fair play to him, because he's been a bit of a little star for Italy as well, I think, you know, over the course of the week.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a great season. You know, he had a really good US Open where he got to the fourth round. I think predominantly this season he has been playing on the challenger circuit, racking up the victories. But in this competition, I think it was just fascinating to see, you know, these are two relatively, you know, young players, and, you know, on the tour. So thrusting them into a Davis Cup final, what was that going to do? You know, relatively inexperienced. It was fascinating to see how and if they were going to be able to handle their nerves, because, you know, that Kim, that first set, it was a little bit error-strewn, wasn't it? The rallies were, there weren't many extended rallies. It normally ended on an error. And you just felt like both players were, understandably so, I think, feeling the occasion. And, you know, to me, the more that match went on, it felt more and more like the person who handles their nerves the best is going to go on and win this.
Yeah, I think that's what we saw. The first set was not great quality, and both of these players have very similar ranking. You know, Popperin's at 40 in the world at the moment, Arnaldi at 44. So, you know, they're basically at the same sort of, I guess, time and place in their career. So it really, you know, was down to very fine margins, you know, and that's what made it a very, I guess, competitive match. But, you know, we've seen competitive matches where both players are bringing, you know, really high quality, and we weren't getting that, but it was competitive in the sense that
it was still entertaining, but it was just very kind of like, it was very seesaw and very topsy-turvy. Mm. And it did kind of go, you know, one way and then the other. And I was a little bit surprised, actually, Arnaldi was able to kind of pull it out the bag. Such was, I feel, you know, the dominance at times from Popper, and he was just really knocking on the door. But as you say, he didn't play the big points well enough, and that ultimately cost him.
That's what defines champions, isn't it? You know, yes, it's not just the big points, you've got to play all the other points well, but it's those crucial matters that crucial moments that matter. Sorry. And I think as a fan, you know, it was exciting because I genuinely didn't know who was going to win, so it really was up in the air, and I think that sort of sense of excitement was great. And it was the great sort of, I guess, appetizer before the Sinner de Menor match. But really, I think this match was the, in a way, that the star of the day, because the Sinner de Menor match was pretty.
That was a procession, really. I mean, it was a formality. And I think, you know, in hindsight, it just showed the significance, I think, of the, you know, of the first rubber, because, you know, from Popperin's point of view, he's thinking, if I win this, I take it to a decisive doubles where my team of Ebden and Purcell probably are going into that as favourites. Whereas Arnaldi's thinking, well, Yannick Sinner's in the form of his life. If I can get the victory here, then we can stop it going to that decisive doubles and get this wrapped up in the singles. So it was not just, I think, the occasion of playing in a Davis Cup final in that first position, but I also think kind of the context and the makeup of each team also brought its own pressure on each of the players.
Yeah, and I think what was really interesting in the press with the Australian team after the match is, you know, Matthew Ebden was talking about how if it had gone to the doubles, you know, obviously him and Purcell would have been in, and they genuinely felt that they, you know, had such a shot at that, and, you know, would have been perhaps the likely winners.
They were saying they were really confident, but kind of reading in between the lines, they were like, we would have won that.
Yeah, because they said, oh, we were 1 point away from, you know, getting to the doubles and perhaps the title. That was kind of the vibe we were getting. And yes, you could say that Popperin, yeah, was 1 point away from getting that break against Arnaldi, but it's no guarantee if he had broken that he would have then gone on to win the match. You know, he might have choked, like, serving it out. So I thought that maybe, you know, there's slightly more to it than just saying, you know, we're 1 point away from getting to the doubles. But I think they wanted to believe that it could have been very different, obviously, if it had gone, you know, a few points here and there, which is the case. And I think it would have been interesting to see what would have happened in that final doubles. I had thought it was going to get that. I had thought Popperin was going to, you know, win that first rubber, but that's not what we got. And I mean, it finished, you know, even with two singles matches, it still finished like local time around, what was it, 8:30. Still a long old day.
Still no churros for us.
Still no churros for us. We have actually failed to have churros. I'm blaming Novak Djokovic for that. Thanks, Novak. But yeah, I mean, if it had gone the distance, would have been a very late night for everyone at the stadium. But here we are. We're still recording at midnight, such is the life working at a tennis event.
Yeah, and I mean the even though the kind of that first match did go the distance and it did go long, in kind of complete contrast, that Dumanor Sinner match, you know, the second singles rubber, it really was a demolition job, wasn't it? I mean, what, 3 in love in 81 minutes? You can see why Sinner's head-to-head record against Dumanor is so overwhelming and one-sided, because I think, you know, throughout, you know, this week, and particularly I think with this match, we saw two players who I think are both known for their movement, you know, around the court. And I almost think that equalized out in this, it equalizes out, I think, in a matchup like this. And as a result, it's more on, you know, once you arrive at the ball, what can you do with it? And I think it just shows that Jannik Sinner knows, you know, what he needs to do a lot more, I think, with the ball. And what he can technically, I think, do with the ball is just a step and a level above what Dumanor at the moment, I think, is capable of.
Yeah, I think on every level, Sinner was the better player and is the better player at this stage in the career. I think Alex Dumanor, for me, is just lacking that extra,
he's
know,
not
special
top 10
something
at the moment. He's knocking on the door of, I think, being in a you know, in a top 10 space. I mean, he's at his, what, career high ranking at the moment. I think he's just outside at
12 at
12,
the moment.
Yeah, but there is, it's almost like when he plays Jannik Sinner, it's like, well, if you want to go higher up, you're going to need to find another gear, because it just felt like whenever they got into kind of extended rallies from the baseline, it was more often than not that some, you know, incredible shot making from Sinner that was the difference throughout the match.
Yeah, and I mean, Sinner has never lost to Alex Dumanor. They have, you know, it's a very one-sided head-to-head, but I think this was the most one-sided of the score lines in their matches. And, you know, obviously, I think that's testament to how well Sinner's been playing in recent weeks and months. And by the time, you know, he'd gone a set up, I think he just, you know, he was playing with full confidence, you know, closing it out for Italy, just inspired, got the massive crowd behind him. It's, you know, a historic occasion. And I mean, I don't blame Alex Dumanor. He kept on trying, he kept on fighting. You know, he started out the match like really buoyed up and, you know, jumping up and facing his team and his box, you know, after every point that he won, really energized, bit of a, you know, a bunny on the court. But obviously, as the match went on, you know, he was winning less and less, and it did, you know, start
the game was up
ever away from him.
I don't even know if the game really got going when, you know, when Jannik Sinner is playing this good of tennis, you know, probably some of the best tennis in his career so far, a real kind of purple patch. It just felt like Dumanor was kind of powerless to stem the flow, really. And so that second set just passed him by so quickly. And, you know, for someone almost like in the, you know, this is like trying to make their final stand for their team, you know, in this position, it's kind of a do or die moment. Dumanor just kind of succumbed, I feel, to the, you know, the pressure and the brilliance that Jannik Sinner was putting on the tennis court.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, hard to blame him really, but I think it probably got a bit much. You know, you thought, I've never beaten this guy. I've got, you know, it's all against me. And, you know, unfortunately, like what Djokovic said, you know, the other day in press, you know, there are certain things that, you know, you've got to just applaud your opponent. They're just doing better on the day, they're playing better tennis than you, and you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to that. And you know, I think he's just got to, Alex Dumanor's just got to find that next level, because he's a very consistent player, great mover, but when it comes up against, you know, the top 3-4 players in the world, he needs weapons, that big weapon.
He needs weapons, and I think we've seen this week with Jannik Sinner, his forehand particularly, the weight of it from the baseline, it's just right up there. It can be kind of so destructive at times, but you know, Alex Dumanor, unfortunately at the moment, it doesn't feel like he has that in his arsenal, and that is what is holding him back. I think, you know, that's not a, I don't think that's a new observation. I think we've known that. I think we've seen that over this season. You know, he's had a great season, but yeah, there's certainly things I think that he can build on if he wants to go even higher up the rankings.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously Italy 2 rubbers to nil today. winning their first Davis Cup in 47 years. They were, you know, it was emotional scenes, a nice little, obviously, ceremony after. Thought Matteo Berrettini at one point was going to stand up on that podium yes. trying to lift that that trophy as well, because he's been here all week supporting.
Oh no, we walked past it. We walked past him outside catering, didn't we? And yeah, it was interesting. I was wondering, because I don't know if our listeners know, but there's a English footballer called John Terry who kind of celebrated playing for Chelsea, winning the Champions League, even though he was like completely injured and didn't play any sort of part in the final. And I sort of wondered if Berrettini was going to go like down the same route in terms of Italy winning. I'm getting involved. I want a piece of the action. But yeah, he sort of stepped aside, didn't he?
Yeah, for the official bit, he was not involved. So he didn't break any rules. But I'm sure he'll be eager to get involved in a Davis Cup winning side next year. And you'd have to think, like, that's Italy are even scarier if you've got Sinner and Berrettini. You know, your second singles is kind of a bit more sorted if you've got Berrettini in your corner, you know, rather than the do I play Arnaldi, Massetti, Sonego. If Matteo Berrettini is fit and healthy and firing on all cylinders, then Italy become an even stronger prospect, don't they, Joel, going forwards?
Absolutely. I mean, it was interesting to read, over the last few days, Italian press were getting on Yannick Sinner's case, actually, for not playing any of the group stage. And it was all, you know, it was all smiles in the native language press conference at the end. But it just shows, I think, that the nation expects you to play. If you are fit, it's during the season, no injury concerns, they're expecting you to be there. And it was quite a massive contrast, really, from those headlines I think we saw in Italian domestic papers compared to, I say, the scenes now where it just feels like Yannick Sinner is just kind of leading. He's like leading this new generation. It was quite funny in press how he spoke about Simon Bellelli as kind of like the old man in the team. He's been around for kind of 15 years on the Davis Cup circuit. But they do have that sort of blend, I think, between they've got experience in the team, but they've also got these young up-and-coming players as well. And I think they can really kind of look towards and perhaps create a legacy, which is not an easy thing to do in Davis Cup, is it? Because you look at the past champions, I think there's been 10 different champions in the last decade, in the last 10 years. So it just shows getting consistency, that is not an easy thing to achieve.
No, and I do see them winning more titles, and you know that will be their aim. And I hope Sinner continues to play Davis Cup. I can understand why he may not have played the group stage. You know, that was very soon after the US Open. And obviously it's full credit to the rest of the team for getting Italy through that section in order for Sinner to shine here. It's very much a team effort. It's, you know, think about all of the ties they've played this whole year and not just in this week. But I think also what's interesting is what Sinner does with the Davis Cup in relation to his personal, you know, his career outside of the team game, because obviously for 90% of the year these players are playing for themselves rather than as a team, but, you know, for their country. And we have seen in the past that, you know, a lot of players, they win the Davis Cup and it really spurs them on in the rest of their career to kind of achieve great things. And actually Sinner was asked about that in the press conference. So let's hear what he had to say about it.
Let's see. I mean, this is something different, something really special, because you don't play for yourself, but you play for the whole team. I think every one of us, we were really excited to be part of this. I have to thank all the team to come through in Bologna, where I was not able to play there. They had some very tough and difficult time there. They stand up for this, and I came here with confidence, you know, and throughout the whole month I played, coming from Turin. I gave 100% all what I had, and I think the whole team, they pushed everyone of each other, and this is maybe our key why we are standing here with this trophy.
It was interesting to hear that, because when I heard the, you know, that question being asked, I instantly thought about when Andy Murray won the Olympics and you beat Roger Federer in, you know, at Wimbledon, won a gold medal, and it was almost like that was the blocker being unblocked for him to go on and win a Grand Slam singles title, which he did at the US Open later on in that year. Did I get that same feeling from Jannik Sinner? I don't feel like I necessarily did. I think he was saying kind of like, this is a great moment. This is a great achievement. But it almost felt like he thinks this is too different, that it's not maybe necessarily going to spur me on in my own career. Yes, it's a feel-good moment right now, but will it help me win the Australian Open Grand Slam title? I'm not so sure. Maybe, obviously, the confidence defeating Novak Djokovic, twice in, twice in a day will help. But I feel like he was a little bit more kind of subdued in terms of, right, blocker has been unblocked. I'm now going to go on and win my first ever Grand Slam title.
Well, he won four sets against Djokovic on Saturday. That's what he needs to do in a Grand Slam. You know, he needs to be able to beat Djokovic over five sets. He hasn't done that yet. And so, that's the kind of next thing to tick off the list, isn't it? And to get the Grand Slam. And it's a very different format in Davis Cup, And obviously, Leighton Hewitt's spoken about the format of Davis Cup. And, we used to have five set matches in Davis Cup. So what it takes to win this is different to, I think, back in the day with Davis Cup and with the Olympics, which I guess plays a bit more like a conventional tournament, doesn't it? So, yeah, I think it's interesting parallels. I know Djokovic spoke as well about how influential the 2010 win for Serbia was. So we'll have to see. But I do think, it seems like Jannik Sinner is putting a slightly different perspective on it. But he's so young as well. He hasn't had those kind of, I guess, as many disappointing finals like Andy Murray had, prior to kind of getting over the line. So I think slightly different circumstances.
We've heard from him throughout the week, him talk about looking over to his team, his compatriots, and that being a source of energy and a source of inspiration. That's not going to be there, on the ATP tour when he's looking over to the left of him. It doesn't work like that. So maybe he just feels like they're just kind of two different beasts. And yes, it's a feel good moment, but is it going to help me, when I'm all alone on the court on the ATP tour? Maybe not so much.
Yeah, I mean, what did you make of, obviously, like the players have their team captains in their corner, and, the team captains really do a great job of selecting the players, motivating them. And I think also in the press conferences, they're sort of there to take the flak and to also support players like off the court as well. And what did you make of, just the whole event, really, the crowd and the production, the show that Malaga put on? I mean, I really enjoyed the experience. I think it's come a long way since what we saw in Madrid in the first rendition of this kind of new Davis Cup era. And I think Malaga have put on a really, really good show for the fans. I think they've made it exciting to be in the arena. Obviously, all the kind of traveling fans and the supporter groups has to me felt like, you've got the home fans and the crowds. But do you still want to see a return to the old school days of Davis Cup, Joel? What's your personal opinion? What would you pick? Do you think we should stick with what we've got?
I think if you were here this week, I think you could have been won over by this format. I think, we've had more or less completely full crowds. Atmosphere's been great. We've had, I think, moments where, for example, today it was a very pro-Italian crowd. It did, in that regard, feel like a home and away tie. Finland-Australia as well. There were loads of Finns in the crowd and it felt like a home and away tie. I think it's still very kind of, I think you're either in one camp or the other, but I think the more this format goes on, and hopefully the more big players still kind of play in it, because I do think having Djokovic here, having Sinner here, and actually having that matchup did add more significance and gravitas to the event. I think the more it goes on in this format, I think it's going to win more people over. And I think, nothing's going to change next year. And if the event next year is as fantastic, I think, as this event has been this year in 2023, then, you know, it might, you know, it might think, well, hang on, do we need to change? Because, you know, it is, I think if you look at this year, I think you have to say it has been a success. There's been no Spain, there's been no USA, some of the big nations not been here. Has that mattered? No. And I think you have to look at the format as one of the reasons that, you know, it has, you know, has been able to thrive, whether you like it or not.
Well, one person that is not so keen on it is Leighton Hewitt, and he was asked about this in the press conference. So let's see what Leighton Hewitt had to say about it.
Well, it's been a great week in terms of our performance, and we gave ourselves an opportunity. Malaga's put on a great event in terms of what they can do with the format that they've got. You know, the hands are tied. There's no home and away, and there's no five sets, so it's not ideal. And we're playing on a surface that, you know, I'm really sick of playing on, to be honest. You know, that's not what Davis Cup's about. It's playing on clay, grass, outdoor elements. You know, there's a lot of different things. So, it's obviously pretty frustrating, I think, that we don't get all the different surfaces and conditions throughout Davis Cup anymore, and especially in the big matches as well.
I swear everyone loves to talk to Leighton Hewitt about the format, because he's such a diehard, I want it to go back to kind of home and away ties. But it was quite interesting here, because he kind of extended beyond that and spoke about how he's sick of indoor court surface. He wants it, it almost kind of feels like he wants it changed. You know, he likes, you know, with home and away, a lot more variables, you know, being outside as well. And I don't know. I think it's tricky, because, you know, this time of year, the end of the year in November, you just naturally think this is when you would have, you know, indoor courts, and it's just, that's the fabric of kind of in team kind of competitions. But I don't know. I was a little bit kind of like, you can't, I don't know if you can have absolutely everything, but to me, I think indoor works perfectly fine.
I think just because this time of the season we're playing on indoor hard courts, it makes sense. You know, players wouldn't really want to go and suddenly switch to outdoor clay in the middle of November. And I just think, I get what he's trying to say, but would his team have fared any better, you know, on a clay court in Chile, for example, you know, as a, you know, random example? I don't know. Would he have said that if Australia had got the win today? I'm not sure. I know he's obviously expressed concerns in the past, but and I wouldn't expect him to just be one round, even though, you know, Malaga have put on a great event.
I was desperate to ask him if Australia had won. I would have loved to have asked him, would you swap in, you know, would you swap your Davis Cup trophy for being able to change the format to home and away, because he has been such a kind of staunch admirer of, you know, going old school. And I want to see if he would, yeah, kind of put his money where his mouth is, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. I thought you were going to say you were going to ask him who selected the music for
Team Australia. Oh, God, are we going on about... Yes, that was so cringe, wasn't it? We had just had this epic battle. They'd got through the final. They'd come through the group stages. And they come out to Land Down Under again by, Men at Work, Colin Hay. It's just like, oh, it's just a bit... just felt a bit comical.
Yeah, I think that choice of music was great for them walking on before their matches, but not as a runners-up runners-up song. I did like a bit of Kylie there, one of the change of ends. I thought that was quite nice. You missed it.
I swear you can't beat the Italian national anthem. I swear whenever I hear that, whatever sporting context, it's just so rousing, isn't it? It's just like...
It is great,
It just gets everyone passionate and ready to go, which I feel is just kind of... It's just what you need, I think, from a national anthem.
Yeah. No, I'm a big fan of that anthem as well. It always gives me, Formula One sort of vibes. Just imagine a, you know, Ferrari on the podium sort of thing.
I will say, Kim, I did notice as well, when they did do the ceremony afterwards... Although I did think the DJ got it wrong with the walk-on music for Australia for that ceremony. I mean, I also didn't understand. They played Queen Don't Stop Me Now, when the champions lifted the trophy, or lifted part of, like, 1/8 of the trophy anyway, why didn't they just play We Are the Champions? Was that not on the list? That felt like the most obvious Queen song to go for.
Well, quite. Maybe they wanted to sort of
Throw a curveball in there.
Break tradition, yeah, or just annoy you, Joel. But right, anyway, I know how much you love your music, especially your 90s music. You've been playing a lot of Robbie Williams in the apartment this week.
I'm not going to lie, I am a little bit partial to some Robbie Williams. Maybe it's because of that new Netflix documentary that is coming out. But what have you made of the DJ tracks that have been played?
Oh, great. Yeah, no, I've enjoyed them. They played a bit of Eurovision the other day, a bit of the Finnish cha-cha-cha second place Eurovision song, which I thought was great.
It feels like we've had a lot of Eurovision.
What, this week? Or I think just the one song.
Yeah.
Well, it's Junior Eurovision happened today.
Okay.
I was following that, the sort of results as that happened. Anyone who listens regularly knows I'm a big Eurovision fan, so I shall be catching up on that tomorrow. But this isn't what people are here for, to talk about Eurovision. So I think, Joel, we should take a quick break now. But listeners, do join us in the second half, where we'll be discussing next year's Davis Cup qualifiers for the group stages, and also next year's Billie Jean King Cup qualifiers for Seville. And also, breaking news, very exciting, that Rafa Nadal will be allowed to play the Olympics without Davis Cup participation. So do not go anywhere.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with UTS.
And Tennis Weekly is proud to be the official podcast of the UTS Grand Final in London.
UTS is the world's newest, most exciting, innovative tennis league, playing an entirely reinvented game format that does away with traditional tennis rules.
And the UTS Grand Final is coming to London's Excel Arena from the 15th to the 17th of December.
The Grand Final features the players who have won the UTS events from around the globe, guaranteeing the best of the best will be competing for the title in London.
Already confirmed are top players such as Andrei Rublev,
Gael the Monfils,
Casper the Iceman Ruud,
with more players to be announced, including a local wildcard.
So if you are looking for the ultimate day out in London in the run-up to Christmas, then secure your tickets to the UTS Grand Final now.
Session passes start from £31 and day passes from just £51 for a guaranteed 6 matches.
Go to www.uts.live for more information or use the link in the description to purchase your tickets now.
We look forward to seeing you there.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly podcast, brought to you by the UTS Grand Final. Now we're going to move on to look ahead to the 2024 Davis Cup season. You know, we have literally just pulled a wrap on the 2023 edition, but we can already look forward to 2024 because they did do the draws for the qualifiers earlier on today at the venue at Malaga. So we have got, Joel, the weekend of the 2nd, 3rd and 4th of February earmarked for the qualifiers. We've got 24 teams playing.
And GB are one of them.
GB are not playing because we have a wild card to go through to the group stages, which are played in September. Rumours are that that's because we are perhaps likely to host one of those events again.
Yeah, I mean, I would expect that is the case because we played Colombia last year to get through, and then Manchester held the group stage. So I presume because we've got a wild card, yeah, we're going to have another venue to choose. I mean, if that is the case, where would you like to see it? We were in Manchester this year. Where do you think they might go next?
Well, I don't think London. I think they'll keep it sort of out of London. So maybe Glasgow. You know, we know that Glasgow can put on a decent tennis event. Maybe Birmingham, Liverpool.
Yeah.
Liverpool
Cardiff,
had Eurovision.
Cardiff? I feel like we haven't really explored kind of Wales yet. So maybe Cardiff could be an option.
Oh, Cardiff would be good. I've been meaning to go there for a while. So two birds with one stone. But yeah, we do have GB and also Spain were given the other wild card, so they will both go through to the September group stages, as will Italy and Australia. They are also in that stage as well already. So we've got 12 more places up for grabs in these original qualifiers in February. Are there any particular ties that sort of stick out to you, Joel, in the mind, looking at the
It's tough. I mean, Netherlands, Switzerland, that sounds, could be quite interesting. Or Germany, Hungary. I mean, USA, Ukraine is interesting because I think Ukraine would be the home team, but I don't think obviously they would be able to play in Ukraine. So I'd be interested to see what location is delivered for that. But those were kind of my mind's kind of were initially going to. It doesn't feel like there's too many kind of ties. I'm like, oh, that's a genuine 50-50. I feel like there feels like a clear favorite in a lot of the ties that I can see being played.
Yeah, I agree. I think the ones you've mentioned are the kind of standouts for me. I think Netherlands, Switzerland might be the kind of closest of the two.
Portugal, I'm curious to see, because Finland obviously have made such a great impact on Davis Cup this season. I just hope they can go and continue it. And it's nice. I think they've got a home tie against Portugal. So I'd love to see them kind of continue where they've left off this season as well.
Mm. Yeah, it'd be great to see them go on another run and get to the group stages and, you know, who knows, get through to this finals as well. We've also had the Billie Jean King Cup qualifiers also being announced. So these are for the qualifiers that were taking place in April. It's the weekend of the 12th to the 13th of April. So, you know, put it in your diaries now. GB have been drawn away against France. So once again, we get France in the
qualifiers. That's a
shocking
draw. That's a total nightmare of a draw, I feel, for GB. I mean, if we couldn't beat them at home, I think it's going to be a very tall order away as well. Assuming Caroline Garcia gets back from her trip from Antarctica.
Oh, you mean she's not going to get stuck there and sort of live with the penguins or something. Assuming it's she's back, and you know, what do you think? That'll be on the clay, because we'll be going into clay season. Do you think they'll have that on the clay in France?
It's gonna be tough. I don't think it's gonna be on indoor hard court like it was in Coventry. I think that's gonna be a very tall order. I mean, you never know, we'll see kind of how things develop, you know, injuries. You know, it's a busy schedule. It's a busy time of year. Some players may not make themselves available, but GB definitely, I think, have a lot of work to do. I think even just to possibly make that, competitive, I think they're going to need a full strength team and maybe a little bit of luck on their side as well.
Yeah. I mean, are there any other matches that draw your eye from the eight ties that have been drawn today?
I mean, if I'm a Swiss fan, I don't like the look of my draw if Iga Świątek decides to play, because they've got Poland. So I think that could be quite tricky. I mean, USA, Belgium, I mean, I never know what singles players USA would kind of make themselves available. But you'd think they've got enough resources there to get the job done against Belgium. I think those for me, as I say, I think it's interesting because it's obviously goes straight into Seville for the finals. So plenty at stake there.
Yeah, so Spain, Czech Republic, Canada and Italy are straight through to the finals in November. Czech Republic with a wild card. I think Spain, because they're the host city for the finals. And then Canada and Italy, because they are this year's finalists. Obviously, Canada will be defending champions. So it's interesting that they get straight through to the finals. But obviously, in the Davis Cup, the wild cards only go through to kind of the
second stage. I mean, where do you stand on wild cards straight through to the final? Is that? Do you feel like that's fair? Do you feel like that's warranted? Do you like to see it? Or do you think it should be a bit more, you know, you got to start with everyone else?
Yeah, I don't know, really. I get, you know, last year's champions going through, perhaps last year's finalists as well. In a way, I get the host nation as well. But then if it's always going to be in Seville, then it's giving the host nation a benefit, you know, every year. I think in that case, it should move around every single year if you're going to do that as a prerequisite for a wild card. I'm not completely sold on the idea of the wild cards. I think it's, you know, it's a... it's a bit random, I suppose, but that's the nature of it, isn't it? And you have wild cards for Grand Slams, you know, and so why not a wild card for the team tournaments? I suppose it's no different.
Well, I would say, do you get wild cards in the World Cup of other sports?
Well, that's true. You don't, do you?
No.
You don't get that.
I mean, you get it if you're the host, so I can understand it from that point of view. But, you know, I would say if you're going to be living by the letter of the law of being a World Cup of tennis, should there be wild cards to go straight through to the finals? I'm not so sure, to be honest.
Well, some people may agree with you, and some people have heard some news today about the Olympics that, and I think some fans are not agreeing with this either. That's the news that Rafa and Carlos Alcaraz will both be able to play at the Olympics for Spain without having to have played Davis Cup, which is normally a, you know, prerequisite. So they're sort of getting a special exemption. I think also is Andy Murray for you know, GB also given the same exception.
I think, yeah, details I think are just sort of coming out at the moment. Emerging, I think it was reported, in Marca, which is a Spanish newspaper. But effectively, Alcaraz and Nadal have not played Davis Cup this year, and they need to do that in order to play Olympics next year. So it sounds like the workings are going on in order to give Nadal and Alcaraz that opportunity to go back to, you know, to go back to Paris, to Roland Garros, to have a crack at a gold medal. I mean, I feel like with Rafa, I feel like you're going to want to give him special dispensation in terms of, if this is going to be his last season, you want to give him as many opportunities as possible. I feel like personally he's earned it. He's been injured this season. He's not had that chance, I think, to, you know, to play. And if he's able to prove that, which should be a formality, really, I don't see why he shouldn't be allowed to play the Olympic Games. And I think maybe with Carlos Alcaraz, it's a little bit of a different equation because, you know, he has been active on the tour this year, and maybe there are a bit more questions in terms of, hang on, he could have played this year. It wasn't like he was injured like Rafa. Having said that, though, I can see why maybe Alcaraz is a little bit more kind of on the edge in terms of like, well, hang on, why should he be able to participate in the Olympics?
Yeah, I get that. And I mean, whether Rafa actually ends up playing or not, I don't know, because it really depends on his body. And obviously he'll be trying to, it'll be his last opportunity to, but we have seen a couple of Olympics in the past where he just, you know, hasn't been able to. So that's a long way off. But yeah, we'll get more news on that as it emerges. That pretty much brings us to a close, Joel, for our trip to Malaga for the Davis Cup this year. It's been fantastic. Obviously, we're really sad that we weren't able to be joined by Chris, who's still unwell at home. So sending him lots of love from the pod. One thing that Chris has taught us to do when we come away.
I've always enjoyed doing this when we've gone away.
It's our peaks, pits and pleasant surprises. So what was good, what was bad, what was the, you know, surprising moment. So I feel like to honour Chris, we should have a crack at this before we sign off for the night. So Joel, what was your peak moment from Davis Cup 2023?
Like, I could go for a really, really, really obvious answer, but I'm gonna go with some very unique experiences. Native language press conferences. I find them so fascinating because I have absolutely no idea what is going on, and yet they just seem to hypnotize me. I mean, we were in Novak Djokovic's Serbian press conference for kind of like, for what? It was like 30 minutes. And it was just fascinating to hear. I think aside of players, you don't necessarily, you know, get from them when you're a fan. You just hear them speak in English and that's it. But to hear the native language press conferences, yeah, that was quite a fun thread for me each day we went to the tennis.
Yeah, it's so much that you said, I think, before one of the Finnish press conferences, yes. You said, right, we definitely got to go to, like, Vertanen's press conference just because she said, I love the Finnish language.
Even if they're, like, really downbeat because it's a defeat, it's the language just kind of, it just lifts it up, I swear.
Well, no, I think that's a great peak moment. My peak moment was probably just, you know, Jannik Sinner getting that win over Djokovic, you know, twice in one day. I thought that was such an epic moment. One of the, I guess, most epic achievements of the year. So I think that was kind of my overall highlight. I'm really glad that we got some great dramatic tennis on Saturday. But Joel, what about your worst moment? I mean, it's all been good fun, hasn't it? But there must be something that was slightly frustrating.
I mean, the candidate for me here is the GB tie, and how, you know, we didn't even manufacture a single break point across the singles, and we lost rather meekly in the end. But we ended up in the catering in the canteen, which was sort of filling out. You know, it was half empty, and we basically watched Cam Norrie lose in a canteen to Novak Djokovic. The TV was on mute. There was like, I don't know, it was like 11 or 12 other people in there. It just felt like a really sad ending for GB in the Davis Cup this year.
Yeah, that was a bit of a
whilst we were eating our dinner.
Yeah, it sort of, yeah, it was quite late in the day, wasn't it? And it was just like, oh, there we go. Norrie's lost. We've lost.
What about you?
I was having sort of cold food. I think the lack of churros. We haven't been able to get the churros due to various reasons, mostly because Djokovic missed a backhand. However, obviously my peak.
You don't sound bitter about this at all.
My peak and pit all rely on that match, so I can't have it both ways, can I? And also, I guess, not having Chris here with us. So I think, you know, it would have been lovely for us all to be together. But yeah, mostly it's been fantastic. And pleasant surprise, Joel, before we finish.
Well, it's got to be. I mean, I feel like Jannik Sinner and Novak Djokovic has been very, very frequent answer. But it was getting another helping of Sinner Djokovic in the singles. I just wasn't expecting that, you know, coming to the event, and the spectacle that they put on in that match was fantastic. And to me, it was almost like a bonus. I was almost like too set on GB and hoping GB were going to make the semis. I actually forgot what the silver lining was. And to get Jannik Sinner and Novak Djokovic so soon after the, you know, their tussle in the ATP, you know, finals in Turin, in the final itself and in the group stage, yeah, that was a very, very pleasant surprise for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm going to go away from tennis for my surprise. The beautiful Christmas lights in Malaga. I walked into the city earlier and saw some beautiful on the main shopping street, like beautiful lights glistening in the sun.
Were they playing Feliz Navidad anywhere near them?
They weren't, but that reminds me, I need to pre-book that same Uber driver for our return trip tomorrow, and I will put in the requests. Can you please play Feliz Navidad?
Feliz Navidad, yes.
Or
yes.
Maybe Robbie Williams. Oh, for yes, my, actually, can we do co-host? That better?
Or maybe, can we get a Robbie Williams cover of Feliz Navidad? Now that would be something, but I don't think it exists. So yes, but yes, we're gonna leave it there. That's it. That's your lot for our episodes live from Malaga covering the Davis Cup. Don't forget to look out for news of our crowdfund, which is going to be coming out over the next week or so. We've also got our end of season quiz, which will be coming out next week. I've already got my questions together. Kim, I think you still need to put your questions together, but that means I've got lots of time to research the season that has been.
Absolutely. Well, we expect you to go out on flying colours then and beat our scores.
Oh my God, so I've just literally set myself up for a fall, haven't I? Nightmare. Oh, well. Right. Yes, and we're going to obviously have content as well from the UTS Grand Final in London. So also look out for that in mid-December. But for now, listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our live coverage from Malaga this week. If you have enjoyed it, remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the upcoming tennis, including the 2024 season, which is just around the corner. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also follow us on social media or email the show. We're on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and X. Our social handle is at Tennis Weekly Pod. You can also purchase Tennis Weekly merchandise at etsy.com/shop/tennisweeklypodcast, or you can email the show tennisweeklypod@gmail.com, and don't forget to check out our website tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back next week for our quiz out, and we will be back next week for our end of season 2023 quiz. You won't want to miss it, brought to you by the UTS Grand Final. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's adios from Kim.
Adios.
And it's adios from me. We'll see you again soon.